Jim, you have been able to do a lot of things with your life. Would you please tell us your story?
Well, I grew up here in Tulsa. I had a fairly normal childhood. I was impacted by the fact that my parents had lost two children before me. I had a sister that died of leukemia and a brother that had died of a lung disorder, and I was their third child. And I, other than that tragedy we all dealt with, I think I had a fairly normal childhood here in Tulsa, Oklahoma. And my goal in life was to be a kind of a professional football player. I wanted to go and play in the NFL, and you know, I was kind of heading on that track, I guess you would say, when during a routine physical to go play a season of football, I was diagnosed with a condition that would result in my blindness. And
how old were you at that time?
I was 17. And so I immediately kind of shifted gears and changed my athletic career to being a competitive Olympic weightlifter. And I was thankful enough to be the two-time national champion. And then went on and graduated from Oral Roberts University here in Tulsa. And, you know, kind of started my business career. Then my eyesight did slowly decline. And eventually at age 29, I lost the remainder of my sight, and that was the beginning of me kind of remaking myself into the things I do now.
So how did you deal with your loss of sight?
Well, I knew it was coming. That was an advantage, but I think it's a lot like if you have a an elderly grandparent that you know you're going to lose at some point, and you think you're ready for it, but when they do finally pass away, you realize you weren't ready for that. And that's kind of what happened to me. And I moved into this little room in the back of my house. I had this little 9-by-12-foot room, and I put my radio and telephone and tape recorder in there, and I really fully intended at age 29 to never leave that room again. I mean, to me, the thought of traveling a million miles a year and talking to a million people in arena events, or running a television network with 1,000 stations, or writing a dozen books, or making movies, or doing anything else, just seemed impossible to me at that time. So I just figured I'd stay there.
Wow. So there must have been some sort of shift in your thinking to where you could begin to pursue all those things you just mentioned.
Yeah, a lot of positive people, a lot of positive books on tape and recordings, a lot of positive material. And then, you know, it was a slow process. It did take me many months to get out of the room. And, you know, the first day I got out of that room, I didn't get a gold medal or an Emmy Award or anything else. I walked 50 feet to my mailbox. And that was kind of the beginning of the next chapter of my life.
And what was that?
Learning how to live as a blind person and starting the Narrative Television Network and writing books and doing the things I do now.
So what was your inspiration behind creating the Narrative Television Network?
Well, that little 9-by-12-foot room I told you about, before losing my sight, that had been my television room in my house. And I was a big collector and a huge fan then, as I am now, of classic movies, John Wayne, Gregory Peck, Humphrey Bogart, all those people. And I was sitting in that little room. I thought I would never leave, week after week after month, and you know, it got kind of boring in there, and one day I realized that I still had all those movies over there. So I picked a movie that I had seen so many times. It was called The Big Sleep, a Humphrey Bogart film. And I just put it on the VCR, and I thought, you know, even though I'm totally blind, I'll still be able to hear this and kind of follow along with what's happening and, you know, and kind of enjoy this movie. And it worked for a little while, but then, you know, somebody shot somebody and the car sped away and I forgot what happened and I got really frustrated and I said the magic words. I said, somebody ought to do something about that, you know, because, you know, I find in my travels that the whole world's looking for a great idea and they trip over one about three times a week, because the only thing you got to do to have a great idea is go about your daily life, wait for something bad to happen, and ask yourself, how could I have avoided that? And the answer to that question is a great idea. And the only thing you got to do to turn that great idea into a great business is ask yourself, how could I help other people avoid that? And the answer to that question is a great and wonderful business.
You know, I want to talk to you for a minute about entrepreneurship. The definition of being an entrepreneur is a person who organizes and manages any enterprise, especially a business, usually with considerable initiative and risk. From your experience, Jim, in starting the Narrative Television Network, What roles do initiative and risk play in business startup?
Well, initiative is the drive to go do something, mm-hmm. and that is critical. I find the people that succeed don't find an easier way to get there. They're just willing to do things the other people weren't willing to do. Risk can be greatly minimized, and you know, if you're one of the people that wants to be an entrepreneur or needs to be an entrepreneur, the risk is never pursuing your dream or your passion. So in my mind, you got nothing to lose and everything to gain by trying.
So is it always good to take a risk?
It's always good to take a calculated risk if the reward is in place, mm-hmm. and if you have counted all the costs, yes. I mean, nothing is ever accomplished without a certain degree of risk.
Mm-hmm.
But I meet people in business and in life that they're risk junkies. They love getting as close to the edge as they can in their personal or professional life without getting burned. No, I never take a risk for risk's sake. The reward has to be in order. The risk has to be minimized. The contingencies have to be in place. Then I'll take the risk.
I like what you said, a calculated risk. In the book, Purpose for Everyday Living, it says, take sensible risks in pursuit of personal or professional growth. It's better to attempt great things and fail than to attempt nothing and succeed. But be sure to avoid foolish risks. When in doubt, reread Proverbs.
Absolutely. And I think, you know, a lot of people fail because they never counted the cost. They never figured it all out before they left. And, you know, a lot of times I get called into a lot of large corporations and small ones to speak or consult with them. And a lot of times someone has launched a business model that by its very nature cannot succeed. I mean, if they'd run the numbers, they would realize you can't do enough business in this location or with this business model to make it. But they try it anyway.
Yesterday I read an article of yours that's entitled A Lesson from a Four-Year-Old. You wrote how a typical four-year-old has incredible confidence in their own potential.
Right.
And then as they grow older, they're taught realism and they give up on their dreams. So what would you tell somebody who's listening today who may have an unrealistic dream?
Well, I think dreams are unrealistic if you're not willing to pay the price to get there or you don't have the cost. I mean, when I was 4 years old, I wanted to play center field for the New York Yankees, you know. Unfortunately, Mickey Mantle was playing in my spot. But I figured by the time I get there, he'll get old and get out of my spot. And that was the sum total of my thinking. And then at some point, you have to look at the tools you have, look at the resources you have, and look at how bad you're willing to do those things. I was an Olympic athlete. I was a world-class athlete. I know what it takes to do that. There was a point in my career where, you know, I was pushing 30. I wasn't able to be as competitive. I was getting injured a lot more. Do I want to hang around 2 more years for another Olympics? And you get to a point where you say, no, I've now reached a reward-benefit ratio where it's no longer worth it to me.
Can you tell us a little bit about your book, You Don't Have to Be Blind to See?
That was my first book. I really never intended to be an author. I was on a speaking tour on the West Coast with Dr. Dennis Whately and Robert Schuller, and I was kind of sandwiched in between these two giants in this program. And standing backstage in this arena, getting ready to go speak once, Dr. Schuller turned to me in that Dr. Schuller voice he really talks with. And he said, my friend Jim, I believe you should write a book. And I said, Dr. Schuller, I can't read a book. Why should I write a book? It doesn't make any sense to me. Well, about that time they introduced me, I went out into the arena and I did my hour. And when I walked off stage, Dennis Whately standing there, and he said, while you were out there, we got it all worked out. Well, I thought they meant the ground transportation to the plane. I didn't know what we were talking about. And I said, so what did we work out? And he said, well, while you were out there, Dr. Schuller called his publisher, and I agreed to write the foreword to your book, and we need your manuscript in about 90 days.
Wow.
And that's how I became an author. So in my first book, I wrote down my experience of losing my sight and my athletic career and kind of starting the narrative television network, and I put it all into a book. But not about my life. My life was only the template to explain some principles or some things I learned through losing my sight. And it was entitled You Don't Have to Be Blind to See. And it was my first of 12 books and did exceedingly well. And I was very proud of it. I never thought I'd write a second book because I never planned to write the first one.
How many books have you written so far?
12.
Wow. And is The Ultimate Gift your latest book?
No, The Ultimate Gift was my sixth or seventh book. It was my first novel. I had never written a novel. My first six books were all nonfiction. You Don't Have to Be Blind to See, and Success Secrets of Super Achievers, and The Way I See the World, and American Success Stories that I did with Donald Trump and Steve Forbes. And then, you know, they kept wanting more and more books. Every year the publishers would call and say, we need another book, we need another book. And I'd written everything I knew and a few things I only merely suspected. So there's a lady here in my office in Tulsa that I dictate all of my weekly syndicated columns and screenplays and my books to. And I came in one day and I said, Dorothy, we're going to write a novel. We've written everything we knew, so it's time to make up a story. And the first day I sat down, I had nothing in my mind but the first line of that book, The Ultimate Gift. It said it was my 80th year of life on earth and my 53rd year in the practice of the law that I was to undertake an odyssey that would change my existence forever. And I had Dorothy read that back to me, and I said, I wonder who said that and what's he talking about? And then what emerged over the next 5 days in between my meetings and phone calls here in the office was The Ultimate Gift. There were no edits, no rewrites. The way I dictated it and the way Dorothy typed it over 5 days is the way that between 5 and 6 million people now have read that book.
Wow, that's incredible. I was in a book club, and we read your book, The Ultimate Gift, and we had the opportunity to meet you and discuss the book. And one of the things that you told us, I wrote down on a little piece of paper, and I put it in my wallet, and it's still there now. And you told us that everyone needs three things for happiness: something to do, someone to love, and something to look forward to, and that God provides all these things. Could you tell us a little bit about that? How did you discover that?
Well, I am a huge reader. When I could read with my eyes like you and most of the people listening to us now, I'm embarrassed to say I got to age 29 and I never read a whole book cover to cover. I read enough to get through school or whatever you have to do, but I never sat down and read a book. And then after losing my sight, I discovered a wonderful thing called the National Library for the Blind, and they provide special recordings of every book in the Library of Congress to blind people. Mm-hmm. Well, I helped to develop a high-speed tape player, and so I can listen to audiobooks at 800 words a minute, which is faster than the vast majority of people ever thought about reading. So I read a book every day. There hasn't been a day in the last 20 years since losing my sight that I haven't read a whole book cover to cover. I get up very early in the morning, and I read a book every day. Well, in that process, I started looking at, you know, what is it we want to achieve? What is success? Success is not money. I meet and I know a number of people I call friends that are billionaires. They're not happy. It's not fame. I've met and worked with some of the most famous people, movie stars, athletes, politicians, and work with them on television, in movies, on stage, and they're not happy. So I started thinking, what is it that would make us happy? And I started looking at those three elements. And if you remove any of those three elements, you'll be unhappy. And and if you have those three elements, you will be happy.
Thank you so much for joining us today, Jim. You know, you're an author, and a lot of your books have the word success in them. And you talked about success in the form of being happy and those three things. Is that what you would call your definition of success, or is success defined differently by different people?
Well, I think we all get to decide what those things are for us. Success is a wonderful thing. It's a self-fulfilling prophecy. We all get to decide where the target is for us. My most recent book I did in conjunction with Steve Forbes, one of the wealthiest people on the planet, but he has a tremendous balance and service orientation to his life, and Steve Forbes is very, very successful. I was named in 2000 the Humanitarian of the Year, and I joined Mother Teresa as one of the recipients. Mm-hmm. She was a very, very successful person, and she didn't have but a few $100 to her name, but she was a very, very successful person because she and Steve Forbes defined success differently. And there's no right or wrong answer. There's simply a right or wrong answer for us. Unfortunately, there are too many people killing themselves to try to get things they don't want to impress people that really don't care in our society. We're trying to keep up with the Joneses or do things or fulfill someone else's idea of success. Because our mother thought we ought to be a doctor, or our father thought we ought to travel, or our spouse thinks we ought to lose weight, or our boss thinks we ought to do this or that or the other, whatever the case may be. And most people, you know, they lost all their ambition. When we were teenagers or young adults, we had those things we wanted to be and do and have and create, and we were going to change the world when we were teenagers. Mm-hmm. But somewhere between there and here, we got so busy making a living that we forgot to create a life. And success is a part of making a worthwhile difference in the world in an area that brings us peace and joy and happiness.
How can you tap back into that when someone was younger and they had big dreams and childlike faith of what they wanted to do in the future, and then they got caught up in the mundane? How can you go back to that type of thinking?
Well, I think the first thing you've got to do is assume everything's possible. Assume that the biggest dream that it was ever put inside of you is still alive and well, and you still have the capacity to achieve that. And I believe that every dream that was ever put inside of us, we have the capacity to achieve. I don't believe that God that made heaven and earth and everything will ever be and do and know and have would put this desire of your heart inside you if you didn't have the capacity to achieve that. So if you assume it's possible, then you've just got to get back into a position where it's achievable. Unfortunately, too many people I meet today have taken so many things upon themselves in the form of commitments with their time, debt with their resources, and they're so weighed down in every area of their life they can't even breathe. They can't keep all the commitments of time and money they have now, much less go out and create something new. And you know, those kind of weights around our neck kill our creativity and our ability to go do and be things other than what we are, because so many people are so maxed out in every area of their life, they're just lucky to hang on.
So it might be good to pare down on some things that aren't important.
If you're not where you want to be, yeah.
Yeah. Well, talk to us about The Ultimate Gift. Did you ever think that would become a movie?
No, I never did. You know, the book came out and took off in a way that just a handful of books ever do, and it's selling in the millions and, you know, dozens of languages around the world, and it's doing all these wonderful things. Then a major movie studio called me, and they wanted to make a movie of it, and I've been in the television business long enough to see what they do to certain people's stories when they turn them into movies.
Mm-hmm.
And I just wasn't interested in that because I'm not in the book business or the TV business or even the movie business. I'm in the message business.
Mm-hmm.
And the fact that they wanted my characters and my story, but they wanted to take the message out of it, really didn't interest me. So I turned down the first major movie studio that rejected their script, and I did the same thing with the second studio, and I really would pretty well resigned myself to the fact that there's never going to be an Ultimate Gift movie. When a friend of mine, Rick Eldridge, who'd been with Disney for about 20 years, called me and said, "Do you still have the rights to that book?" And I said, "I do indeed." And he said, "Let's turn it into a movie." And he had started an independent company, and I liked some of the work he was doing, and we made the movie, and very lucky to get just an amazing ensemble cast with, you know, fellow Oklahoman James Garner and then Brian Dennehy and Academy Award nominee Abigail Breslin, and it was just a tremendous joy to work with her, and you know, the soundtrack with Bob Dylan and B.B. King and Willie Nelson, and just fabulous, fabulous people. And we were able to put that together, and then it won the very first film festival it was played in, and then 20th Century Fox came in and said, "We'd like to be your partner in distributing the film." So it was just great to be able to make up the movie independently, but then have a major studio come alongside and work with us in distributing the picture.
That is it's an incredible honor to have your book turned into a movie, I'm sure. I know you received another honor recently. I was at the ORU commencement service, and you got an honorary doctorate from Oral Roberts University. And was that something that you expected?
No, never expected that. It meant a lot to me. I grew up around ORU. My parents worked and still work at ORU. They have worked for the Oral Roberts Ministry and University for over 50 years now and still working. My mother and father run University Village, the retirement center that ORU has out there. And so, you know, I attended the university, met my wife Crystal there. So it was ORU's always been a big part of my life. I have a scholarship fund there, and we're in our 20th year of providing scholarships to several hundred ORU students over the years, and really proud of that, but to be able to get the doctorate, particularly this year when ORU has kind of been going through some difficult times and then the transition and then remaking themselves, and I think moving in some extremely positive directions. So it meant a lot to me.
That's wonderful. Yeah, I also attended ORU and graduated from there, and I know that Tony attended there too, our co-host. And
yes.
As a student, what I enjoyed a lot about Oral Roberts University was their chapel services. And I remember you came and so many other people that were just so encouraging and faith-building. And so that was something that really sticks to you in a time that's in your life where you're forming what you want to do and where you want to go and taking steps in that direction. What do you think about the college-age student and what they should do if a college person is listening today?
Well, I think the thing you want to do when you look at college is you want to look at the overall experience. You want to look at what comes out the other end. I mean, college is not a place to tread water for 4 years. It's really, you know, what do you want to accomplish? What do you want to learn? And who do you want to be around when you do that? And people today need to understand that student loans are real. You're going to have to pay those things back. And it's staggering, the cost of college today and the amount of debt that some people are carrying. So I think you need to weigh all those things when you look at your college career and really look at where you want to go and what you want to learn.
Mm-hmm. What about advice for the person that's out of college and they're in their career? And what advice would you give to that person that's listening today?
Do what you love, pursue your passion, continue learning always. Unfortunately, the majority of Americans haven't read a book since they finished their last year of education, whatever that is. And, there was a study done not too long ago of the CEOs of the Fortune 500 companies. Those are people who define success by running large companies. We all get to define our own, but these people are at the top of their field. And they tried to do a survey to see what do these 500 people have in common, the people that are at the very top of their profession. So they looked at, are they married or not? Do they go to church or not? Do they exercise or not? What do they do? Mm-hmm. And the thing that they found that these 500 people have in common more than anything else is they read or listen to motivational, inspirational, and educational material on a daily basis. They continue to learn. They continue to grow. The world is changing faster than it ever has, and it's accelerating even more. And to think that you got out of college and you're done, you're just kidding yourself. I mean, we've got to continue to grow and learn, and we've got to pursue our passion.
Yeah, I know that if you're not moving forward and doing the things that you said as far as encouraging yourself, you're most likely slipping back.
Yeah, and absolutely.
It's hard to recognize that sometimes, so it's good to make a conscious decision that every day you're going to do something positive and you're not going to get stuck in a rut.
Right, because every day we trade one day of our life. So we've got to realize whatever we accomplish today, it better be getting us closer to something we care about, mm-hmm. or else we've wasted one day of our life getting there. And, you know, you've got to realize that the world is moving on all the time. When I was training for the Olympics, my coach had a picture he put on the wall of the giant Russian weightlifter. And every time I'd want to take it easy or take a day off or not do my best, he'd just point to that picture and say, "What do you think he's doing today?"
Hmm. Wow. Jim, I understand that you have something online that you'd like to share with our listeners today.
Well, I have a new book out that I just did with Steve Forbes called Ultimate Productivity. It's How to Succeed Through Motivation, Communication, and Implementation, the most success principles that anyone that reaches the top utilizes more than any other. And people can go to ultimateproductivity.com to take a free productivity profile and receive a free assessment on their strengths as it relates to motivation, communication, and implementation.
Well, that sounds wonderful. I'm going to do that today. Jim, thank you so much for being on. We really appreciate it, and we hope that you continue to be a success in all that you do.
Well, thank you for everything you do and for having me on your show.